instantie een terugblik op de conferentie die hij bijwoonde in Oekraïne, het zogenaamde Kiev Security Forum waar hij naartoe ging. Het ging over een open Oekraïne, zegt hij, maar niemand uit het oostelijk deel van het land bleek aanwezig te zijn. Dus het ging vooral over Rusland en dan Poetin in het bijzonder. Maar naast dat, dat zijn eigenlijk punten die hij bij ons vorige gesprek een maand geleden al aanhaalde, heeft hij het ook meer specifiek over de rol van Canada. Het was namelijk zo dat de Canadese ambassadeur bij Oekraïne daar ook aanwezig was op dat forum. En hij vroeg de ambassadeur over de verkoop van wapens aan Saudi-Arabië. Maar dus kreeg het deksel op de neus. Met andere woorden, hij, die man zei hem eigenlijk niks. Namelijk dat het, wel, u zult dus horen wat hij zei. Derek Monroe.
Anyway, going back to our conversation in Ukraine, the Kiev Security Conference, what struck me, not necessarily unexpectedly, that it's going to be only one camp represented, but the original auspices of the Ukraine Security Conference was to open Ukraine, which means all the views of Ukrainian people would be represented there. However, nobody was really available from the East. Normally, none of the panel speakers, none of the attendees, as far as I can tell.
Yes.
And when I brought this issue up with the organizers of the Yatsenyuk Foundation, they told me that they did invite some people, including panel speakers on the East, but however, they will not name the names. And I requested, can I just simply get the list of the people that may were invited but just didn't show up for a lot of different reasons? They denied to make this type of revelation to me. I don't know why. If they have nothing to hide, why should be they afraid to disclose this information? So that was the first thing. Second thing, which I think I struck very odd, that supposedly this conversation was about Ukrainian security situation and the current, you know, way of accession of diplomatic negotiations to have them be accessed to NATO and European Union. However, realistically, everything was about Putin and Russia. I would say 70% of subject matter was about Russia, including one panel that truly even delved into the psychological profile of Putin. And, you know, I mean, it's really ridiculous stuff. Mm-hmm. It should normally not be under any kind of degree of even scrutiny, because ultimately, if you're going to make the conference about security, about personal ideas and personal, you know, psychological makeup of the leaders of certain countries, that it really tends to lead to nowhere. So this was something that
but
just
considering
really kind
the current
of
political context, it's not totally surprising, right?
Well, it isn't. But on the other hand, you know, the idea was supposed to be somewhat impartial and bring the whole Ukraine open from a variety of different political views and spectrums. And it wasn't the idea. But what I found really amazing and really surprising one thing was the really a very aggressive approach of Canadian government that sent its ambassador there with several different people from different foundations and think tanks, where in my personal conversation with the ambassador, I approached him specifically on the idea because it was a really good occasion to ask that question, but quite extensive weapons sales of Canada to Saudi Arabia, which happened to be kind of on the agenda and in Trudeau's government that nobody in the U.S. media wants to talk about. Sure, everybody talks about U.S. involvement and some Western European companies, but not about Canadian corporations' involvement in this as well. The response was that I'm so ahead of time. That's what I think Roman Vashchuk, the ambassador, told me. Also, he characterized.
So what does that mean? That the deal hasn't been struck yet, or
I have no idea. I think maybe I'm just having information that he doesn't have, or perhaps maybe I'm too ahead of my agenda to ask those questions that I'm even allowed to even ask those questions. It was really truly an interesting perspective on that. Plus, second question I asked him: why did he characterize in conversation with me the people who are, you know, troublemakers in the East, so rebels, he can actually characterize them as a Ukrainian Al-Qaeda and Ukrainian ISIS. Uh-huh. I mean, this is truly coming from the official government source. It's truly unprecedented. And I went to the Ministry of Foreign Affairs of Canada with those questions. And what I got in response about a week later, which is about a week and a half ago, was a scripted response stating that any kind of personal attorney says a personal recommendation made by one of their staff should be addressed to them themselves. I mean, so I would have to go back to the Ukrainian embassy in Canada. So I would just simply ask if their opinions about conflict in Ukraine comes as a personal matter, a matter of personal representation and persuasion of the ambassador, or is it part of the Canadian foreign policy? Because ultimately, we have to kind of look at it, you know, from both sides here. And yes, they simply refuse to avoid, you know, answer that question. I find it's really troubling because it's why is Canada involved so heavily in the issues in Ukraine? Obviously, U.S. is involved in it for its own particular corporate interests. And, you know, and they go back, you know, with Victoria Nuland, neoconservatives and a bunch of other people spending over $5 billion of our, you know, hard-earned U.S. taxpayers' money. It's one thing. But Canadian government, all things, you would be surprised.
Ja, dat was dus de eerste deel van het gesprek met Derek Monroe over eigenlijk vooral niet ervan over de inmenging of, wat, of, ja, of de horing van Canada in verband met Oekraïne dan vooral. Wat zei hij verder? We vroegen hem over... hij ondervroeg, Derek Monroe ondervroeg de ambassadeur over zijn standpunt over de rebellen in het oosten van Oekraïne. En die worden door de ambassadeur dan vergeleken met Al-Qaeda in het oosten. De Oekraïnse IS noemt hij ze. Wat wel opvallend is, want ik denk niet dat dat extreme islamisten zijn. In het tweede deel vraag ik wat voor wapens Canada nu eigenlijk verkoopt. Dus het gaat over Saudi-Arabië, maar ook over Oekraïne. Dus Saudi-Arabië militaire voertuigen, ik heb het eventjes opgezocht, $12 miljard. En aan Oekraïne worden er blijkbaar raketten verkocht. Dat zal dan waarschijnlijk afweer zijn of zoiets. Whatever. Derek Monroe.
What kind of weapons are we talking about? Matters, but okay.
Well, they were selling to Saudi Arabia and mostly personal armored carrier. I've heard some missiles as well. To Ukraine, a variety of different sources are telling me that some of the U.S. TOW missiles, Javelin missiles, are being sold to Ukrainian army. Sold is also a mischaracterization, perhaps, because nobody ever seen the money. So the issue is, you know, usually if there's a sale contract, it requires some kind of degree of, you know, money exchanging hands. Mm-hmm. And nobody really is really willing to go on record that actually U.S. corporations are getting paid from Ukraine, or they're getting paid from Pentagon, or it's being, the equipment's being leased or given or whatever. It's really hard to tell. Nobody really has a clear idea how those weapons are winding up in the uh-huh. Ukrainian military. And what's also very troubling to me, they're winding up in the Azov Battalion formation, which by law in the U.S. is prohibited from receiving any U.S. aid due to some neo-Nazi activities within the ranks. And it was pretty wildly publicized about 2 years ago, and somewhat independent U.S. media as well as Russian media picked it up on that. So it's extremely difficult to see what's really happening here. There were photos in February, in January, of U.S. trainers training members of the Azov battalions in Ukraine, and then those photos disappeared. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure if it's something personally delegated from the White House to basically go around the U.S. existing laws to train the most viable fighting force. That's what they being called, which I'm pretty sure that is. If you pretty much are pumped up with a very neo-Nazi and very nationalist like agenda. But, you know, it's kind of hard to tell exactly why those things are happening there. And yep. It's something that I think is really troubling to the degree where it creates a situation of escalation that where the Minsk agreements points are simply not going to be enforced to the point of basically another escalation, another flare-up of the conflict in the East. And what's also interesting, look, I'm not a fan of Putin. I don't particularly care for the right-wing government in Russia. But it said yesterday there was a report done by Stockholm Peace Institute stating that for the first time in 20 years, Russia actually has decreased its military budget. And nowhere in the United States, nowhere in the Western media, this information is being picked up upon, which I find very curious. Yeah. You know, so it seems that something's really weird what's taking place right here now in Ukraine.
Derek Monroe, deel 2. En er stellen dus ook vragen over hoe die wapen levering gefinancierd worden aan Oekraïne dan. Niemand weet eigenlijk hoe dit gebeurt. Bovendien gaat er blijkbaar een deel van die wapens mogelijk naar een fascistische militie. De naam ontschiet mij nu even. Ja, allemaal zaken die er niet toe zullen leiden dat de vredesakkoorden van Minsk zullen nageleefd worden, zegt Monroe. Merkt ook op, voor de eerste keer in 20 jaar gaat het defensiebudget van Rusland naar beneden, zei hij. Dus we gaan dan over naar de Zweden eigenlijk, want dat is een Zweeds onderzoeksrapport van het SIPRI, dat ook zegt dat 1,7 biljoen, dus 1000 miljard, de 1700 miljard dollar uitgegeven werd aan, defensie en offensie in 2017, waarvan bijna de helft, wel een goed derde door de Amerikanen, 620 miljard. En, en inderdaad, volgens die cijfers van het SIPRI, ging het defensiebudget van Rusland met 13 miljard naar beneden. Goed, we gaan daar verder dan over spreken. Eerst nog een plaatje van Neil. Waar zaten we? Neil Young 1968 en Alternative TV. Maar Neil Young dus. Neil Young, I've Been Waiting For You, 1968. En we gaan over dan naar het derde stukje van Derek Monroe. De Zweden, naast het Cyprus Instituut, heeft hij het vooral over de Zweedse vliegtuigjes die vanuit Cyprus spionagevluchten zouden uitvoeren voor de kust van Syrië en Libië. Het is wel een beetje opvallend, want blijkbaar worden dus, je hebt de schepen die getrakt worden, maar blijkbaar worden vliegtuigen ook getrakt, zo'n soort GPS. Ontvangst. En er is een of andere slimmerik van welke website was het, die dus is dat die Learstream, dus die kleine jets, gevolgd heeft, waar dus blijkt dat de Zweedse vliegtuigen, één of twee, dus daar over en weer vliegen langs de Libanees-Cyprische kust. En voilà, opvallend, want Zweden is geen lid van de NAVO. Derek Monroe vermoedt dat de Zweden het dus doen in opdracht van de Verenigde Staten van Amerika. En dat het gaat over het bespioneren van de Russen.
Lebanon, and spying.
Yeah, I mean, it is really curious. I finally got some information from Sweden this morning from my contacts there. And it was really interesting because the person that I was dealing with, I usually have pretty well connected, and they basically told me they don't know anything about this. So It's almost like, you know, Aviationist is a really cool magazine. They cover normally just the movements of different planes around the world. And I think they did many years ago, maybe 10 years ago, write about the really weird planes showing up at different airports, which later on we found out were used by CIA fronts to do rendition, you know, of different prisoners, and they were not, you know, they're unregistered, what have you. Well, this magazine...
rendition being like kidnapping, right?
Exactly, which actually is a violation of not only international law, but also a violation of many states, including Polish law and Thai laws, where those black sites of CIA were located at.
But that was done by the Americans themselves, right? Because we are talking here about, you say, spying by Swedish
You know, this is something agents. Really. This is really weird because that's how the story gets really interesting. It's really hard to tell.
Maybe first explain what we're talking about, right? We're talking about spy planes in front of the Lebanese coast, Swedish spy planes spying on Russian installations or something like that.
Well, these are the Gulfstream planes, which are retrofitted with a lot of very high-end electronic equipment in order to track the hardware, in this case, Russian hardware. You know, as Sweden is not a part of NATO, it would be well within its rights to do that in, you know, in the Baltic Sea outside of Kaliningrad, where the main US, Russian installations are, and within the rights to do so, like every other country does. But what's been happening since last year, since a major NATO exercises just took place there, where they're actually the largest in Scandinavia, I think, in many, many years. I don't know how many years already by now, which actually NATO participated together with the Swedish and Finnish and Danish forces, is that those planes are not showing up in based in Cyprus, going around Syria Lebanon coast, and you know, and I've heard there are even violations of the Lebanese airspace in this case, and nobody really knows what's really going on here. I mean, perhaps this is some of the outsourced job by our government that's doing it to Swedes,
But they are leaving from Cyprus, you say?
Yes, they're apparently the photos were taken in base in Cyprus.
But the Cypriotic authorities must know what this is about. They must be aware.
I hope we do. You know, that's the one thing that it's really amazing. Historically speaking, NATO, NATO has not, Sweden was not part of NATO. And it's very hard to tell exactly what the hell is the Swedish Air Force doing in Eastern Mediterranean. My hunch would be, looking at geopolitics, is that they're being hired to do so or have certain tasks to perform vis-a-vis Russian involvement in Syria. And, you know, why U.S. cannot do it itself, or Israel that has probably one of the most sophisticated surveillance fleet in the world, actually. Some people say better than U.S. It's beyond me. Why are they showing up there? As I said before, the only hint I was able to get was that Sweden does have a small presence in the Golan Heights around to monitor peace under United Nations auspices. Yep. However, any kind of situation such as sending additional hardware, military equipment, or what have you, would have to be disclosed and done under auspices of United Nations and under directives on it as well, and would have been completely transparent. Here, we have a situation where the planes are showing up out of nowhere with this type of capability, so it's really kind of hard to tell. I will go ahead and send an email within the next few days to get some maybe clarification on this, if I were to get any points on this. But it's like, it seems to be, there's a definitely interesting turn of events where many different players are showing up into this. And it also calls with the extension of the involvement of NATO within the Baltics. They're there supposedly for provision of the deterrent against Russian aggression. And this is what's being talked about quite openly, the Russian aggression, not a threat. Well, as far as I know, the people who are there, they're a little bit apprehensive about, you know, military buildup and Russian presence, but nobody from regular people I spoke with in Lithuania as well as in Estonia feel that they're being, you know, under Russian aggressive threat. And there's a current exchange of our brigade in Poland right now is taking place, where the new set of troops are coming in there to replace the existing troops that are being rotated. So it's kind of really hard to tell exactly what's really taking place. And I know that there is for a fact, new set of equipment is being brought into Poland right now. Another armored brigade, I believe. Mm-hmm. So it's really kind of hard to tell, you know, where those things are going down right now. And what Stockholm report from the Peace Institute said, that Russia is actually de-escalating its military spending for a lot of different reasons, including economic. It just doesn't make a whole lot of sense to, you know, from geopolitical standpoint, unless we are trying to take the initiative in the region. And taking initiative in the region can mean many different things.
They must have spent quite a lot of money in Syria in the war. So is that a separate budget then? Because it's like the war in the U.S. that the U.S. waged in Afghanistan. That you had a normal budget, and then you had a separate $50 or whatever billion dollars for the war in Afghanistan, which was on a separate budget. So I'm surprised that you say that the defense budget would have gone down, especially with the war in Syria probably costing quite a substantial amount of money. Well, and it is low, and it is very low compared to what the U.S. spends, of course.
Well, of course, quite possible. I mean, our budget is perhaps maybe just an accounting trick where the Russian government is telling, well, look, we're not escalating anything, we're cutting down. So I don't have a privy to thinking of the Russian government, so I really kind of comment on this. However, Stockholm Peace Institute has been rather reputable in the past to provide pretty accurate information on that. So I find really hard to, you know, if I have to hard find, you know, believe anyone, I'll definitely believe them versus one government or the other government. And I find troubling, like you said earlier, it's absolutely quite right that we have an official budget that's being presented to the American people in Congress to vote for. However, we also have a black budget that covers the international, you know, espionage, intelligence, military activities, what have you, there's sort of like a black hole that really kind of nobody knows where the money is going through. And it's quite possible that, you know, the Russians are playing the same games with their budget as well. So yeah. I guess it's everything's open for the interpretation.
Eentje van ATV uit 1978. Naast Little Lonely, met zeer kan beginnen met Jules Holland. En nu een beetje uitfreaken met de gitarist, wiens naam mij ontschiet. We waren onze luisteraarsbestand aan het testen. En ik was van de week in Engeland en daar vertelde men mij dat dus, ze in Groot-Brittannië ook er toch serieus over denken om de FM uit te faseren. Het is maar dat wij van de Radio Centraal van de Radio van op de hoogte zijn. Dus in Groot-Brittannië gaat men ook naar DAB, want soms nemen we hier onze wensen voor werkelijkheid. Vooral dan om niet te veel actie te moeten nemen.
In Nederland zou men nu al aan het bekijken zijn of DAB Plus niet kan worden afgebouwd.
Afgebouwd?
Afgebouwd.
Waar heb je dat gehoord?
Dat heb ik gelezen op Radiovisie.
Oké. En dat is een recent artikel?
Ik denk niet dat dat een recent artikel is.
Dan moeten we dan een keer bekijken, want, wat ik dus hoorde van Engeland is dat ze dus FM willen uitfaseren. Mm. En het probleem voor de vrije radio's is dat er dus eigenlijk dat GATS alles georganiseerd heeft om de mediagroepen op de DAB te krijgen. En de VRT mag ook meedoen, maar niks voor de vrije zenders, niks voor enkel de private mediagroepen, niets voor de radio's die uiteindelijk de weg geleid hebben voor deze mediagroepen. Goed, terug naar Derek Monroe, het laatste stukje. Dus deel 3 was over de spionage van de Zweden voor de kust van Libië en Syrië. Ik kader dat in het geostrategisch spel in de Baltische Zee, hè, want de Zweden zijn daar actief en daar, de Zweden zijn daar, ja, hebben daar NAVO-oefeningen gehouden, alhoewel Zweden niet tot de NAVO behoort. En NAVO zorgt daarvoor een soort bescherming van de Baltische landen tegen de zogenaamde Russische agressie. En zijn punt is dat de militaire aanwezigheid van de NAVO toeneemt, terwijl de Russen anderzijds hun defensiebudget teruggeschroefd hebben vorig jaar. De Amerikanen heb ik ook gezien, die volgens het rapport van CIPRI, die hebben de afgelopen 7 jaar hun defensiebudget verminderd, zoals ze verminderd hebben. Maar aan die daling is een einde gekomen. Dus in 2017 hebben ze dus $620 miljard uitgegeven. En dat was evenveel als het jaar ervoor. En het valt dus te verwachten dat 2018 dat het daar de lucht in zal gaan. Want het was geen 60 miljard of zo dat Trump extra wilde uitgeven. Om te eindigen. Hoe zit dat eigenlijk met die Zweden? Hadden ze daar geen linkse regering, dacht ik. Om te eindigen blikt hij dan terug, Monroe, op Oekraïne, waar hij vorige maand was. Goed, volgend stukje, laatste stukje, Derek Monroe. Voilà. Zaten we nu daar of zaten we nu nog aan ATV? We zitten aan ATV.
Back to the Swedish. They're not even part of the NATO, so but they must have been developing a special relationship because they seem to be the most active member almost. I mean, hosting the war games and now doing missions for probably at least members of the NATO, if not NATO themselves.
Or for the big brother, I don't know. It's really hard to tell. You know, it kind of goes along with my articles in the past from reporting from Sweden.
You were in Sweden. I don't know what the current government is, because at one point they were actually a leftist government. I'm not sure coalition is in power now.
It's center-right government right now, but I think it's going to be changing again. It's politically, it's very interesting situation because it seems to me, and I went pretty much all over the southern part of the country, and talk to different people, including media people, and there are just simply some subject matters like international relations, the context of NATO that simply nobody wants to write about or talk about. It's almost like a taboo system here in a way that exists. And the story that was reported by Vationist, most people in Sweden have absolutely no idea what's going on with that. I mean, it's sort of like it's completely out of the blue. So it's kind of hard to tell exactly what's taking place, especially as you just indicated, Sweden is not a part of NATO, and it is officially an associated, I think not even associated member, have some kind of special status, I think, but it's traditionally it has been a neutral country. And so something like this kind of showing up, you know, on the in Eastern Mediterranean, where Sweden really doesn't have any national security interests. I don't even think that they even have any economic interests at this point. I'm not sure if they're going to be building IKEA in the suburb of Damascus anytime soon. So I find it hard to believe that, you know, selling cars there, Volvo is actually Chinese, and that it's not even Swedish anymore. So it's kind of hard to tell exactly what's really driving this, unless there's some kind of directive from the above coming somewhere where they have to play the game. That's just my guess, I guess, on this part.
Okay, so we'll have to wait and see there. Is there anything, any other topic in the 5 minutes we got left?
Well, Ukraine is also an interesting subject matter to the degree where kind of situation is constantly evolving to the point where it's kind of becoming completely out of control. Now, what I find is truly amazing in Ukraine on this trip is that complete divergence of the political worldview of the elites and regular people on the ground. I mean, there's simply complete people have to live their lives, and they simply kind of gave up on the political establishment to really deliver anything, any kind of economic progress, fight on corruption, what have you. You just got to the point where, you know, we have lived our own lives, and these are people who are in a high castle, sort of like a feudal elite. They have to do what they can. And so as long as they don't really interfere with us, I think that's good enough. That's just the kind of degree of resignation I've seen in Ukraine, which I have not seen 2 years ago. There was still a lot of hope in Ukraine, but 2 years ago, I would say there's absolutely nothing left now.
Too bad. So how is it going? Is there going to be something happening from the bottom, or is there like a civil society there?
Well,
they've given up, right?
I think it's given up. I think, sure, there are a lot of different NGOs which are coming to Ukraine with foreign funding, foundation funding, or funding from some oligarchs who want to create this facade of a civil society, facade of this type of rule of law, but it's a completely Potemkin village. I mean, it's simply, you know, the fundamental issues in Ukraine are not addressable to the degree where to look at any kind of major modernization of the country, it's almost similar to what's been happening in China in early 1900s, where you have a country divided between different warlords and different, you know, interest, economic interest groups, and there was an empress in Beijing, official empress in Beijing. Unless you're going to break up an oligarchical power structure that's connected to economic structure in Ukraine, nothing's going to change. And the political establishment that is currently running the country with a variety of different coalition parties represent interests only of the moneyed oligarchical elites that do not represent regular people. So unless you have like a Bolshevik-like revolution, where it might be coming actually in a few years, where the elites would be, I would say, physically removed from the political establishment, nothing simply is going to change. The status quo as it is right now, the degree of corruption, complete respect, lack of respect to the Ukrainian law, international law, abuse of the media, of the independent journalists, for example, is going to continue with the tutelage of the West, giving them more money and more IMF and Western-backed loans in order to prop up this facade of the failed Ukrainian state, because ultimately the state is a failed state. And if it's not able to address the majority of people's interests, it is simply a failed state.
A failed state. Tot zover Dirk Monroe.